Welcome to Contextual Electronics. My name is Chris Gammel, and this is the very first podcast in a new series of podcasts that we're going to be releasing here on YouTube and contextualelectronics.com. Now, some of you may know I also do the Amp Hour podcast, which is a podcast with Dave Jones, and that is an audio-based podcast, and that's something that I've been doing for 10 years now, which has been a really great way. That's actually how Contextual Electronics all started. Basically started talking to people, and the idea of putting together theory and practice was really the genesis for Contextual Electronics and this whole program. I wanted to start a Contextual Electronics podcast because there's sometimes people that are outside of the 30-year veteran, you know, the kind of people we talk to on the Amp Hour are 30-year veterans and people that are super deep into electronics. And that's not necessarily everyone, that's interesting in its own right, but that's not everyone who's out there. And I really want to talk to a wide range of people. I want to talk to people in the mechanical realm and the artistic realm and software realm and people who are using electronics every day, but aren't necessarily specializing in electronics. And so the Contextual Electronics podcast is going to be about bringing in stories that of people that are using electronics, but they're using it to some end and not super deep on any particular topic. I think this is going to actually bring in a lot of great different voices. I think this is going to help showcase people who are, you know, maybe nearer to the beginning of their journey. We're also going to have some people that are further in, but it's going to have a different kind of feel than the Amp Hour. Also, as you may have noticed, this is video, or if you're listening on audio, yes, there is a video component as well. And so we're going to try not to show too much stuff that the audio folks cannot see. You know, if you're riding your bike, you don't want to stop and look at a video or anything like that. We may have some visual elements, and I'll try and explain them always. Our first episode here is with Sophie Wong, who's a maker and an artist and a designer, and she just has some of the greatest projects out there on the internet. She's really, really well-versed in a lot of different types of design. She shares her work. She shares her learning process, which I really appreciate, and you'll hear in this episode. And her output is just really, really wonderful to watch. So I hope you enjoy this first episode of Contextual Electronics Podcast, and we're looking forward to more in the future. So welcome, Sophie. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and some of your work?
Yeah, so I'm a designer and a maker, but my background is in design. I actually studied graphic design, but I was really fortunate in my design education that my professors taught design as a framework. So they taught us how design is used in lots of different ways, not just graphics, but we studied architecture, we studied civil engineering, we studied marketing. So I kind of came away from that thinking like I can apply design to everything I do. And then I worked as a graphic designer. I worked in fashion, I started my own fashion line, and I just started experimenting with things and exploring and kind of wound up doing costumes and eventually learned a bit about electronics and how to add electronics into my wearable projects. So it's been kind of this meandering journey through whatever I became interested in at the time, but always sort of filtering it through my design thinking and my design process. So I just kind of let myself get excited and interested in new things a lot. And then I pursue those things, and I just use the same techniques that I've used forever in trying to figure out how that new technique works, how I can apply it to what I want to build. And that's been my tool to get through learning electronics.
Yeah, that's great. And I really like that you share. So like, I remember your 30 days, I think you're doing Fusion. You're doing like, You shared all this stuff as you do that. And, you know, as part of Contextual Electronics is all about like learning, kind of learning alongside, like sitting on someone's shoulder and watching what they're doing. And that's such, I'm so much in awe of the way you did that. Because first off, I think it takes a lot of guts to be like, hey, I don't know what I'm doing necessarily, but I'm going to show my work anyways. And then just watching what someone else does, it's just always interesting. How was that process for you?
Yeah, that was really interesting. And actually, I was kind of nervous to say that I was going to do that and commit to doing that sort of, you know, semi-publicly, like, you know, and that's something that comes up for me a lot because I do post my process pretty often. Mm-hmm. And I find that the things that I post that people really get interested in or engage with or respond to are the things that they can identify with. And that's more often the process. And that's really useful for me too, because I hear back from people like, oh, I struggled at that point too, and this is what I did. Or it just feels so nice to not be the only person that is like,
exactly,
I can't find this tool or whatever. So that particular project, I called it 31 Days of Fusion 360.
I missed a day. Sorry.
I sometimes call it 30. It just happened to be like the first day of August when I decided I was going to do that. Mm-hmm. And so it was like, how many days are there in this month? It happened to be 31. But I had this idea that if I, so what had happened was I was using Fusion 360 in my work occasionally. And this is what I do a lot because I'm so much of a generalist that I go from one technique to another technique, and I can't possibly store all that information in my brain all the time. So I write a lot of things down, but I often have to look a lot of things up, even when I'm going back to something that I've done in the past. And I realized that for Fusion 360, I was going back to the same tutorials over and over again, just like spaced out by 6 months, because mm-hmm. I couldn't retain that information, because I would use the tutorial, I would consume the knowledge, and then I would use it, and then I would just move on. And I never spent the time over a long period of time to actually commit it to my memory really well. So I was like, I'm not actually learning this. Like, I need to actually spend some effort to learn this if I don't want to have to look up the same tutorial every 6 months.
Right.
So
and there is that element of repetition is like important any kind of like learning process. And so you had the, you know, the kind of accountability to the public. You said, hey, I'm going to do this thing. That's great. Then do you find, so that was almost a year ago now. I mean, how mm-hmm. do you find your skills are now that you've been, you know, 10 months out, I suppose, having done this kind of intensive learning process?
I am so surprised at how much has stuck with me. I just jumped into Fusion 360 again over the past week, and I've been doing it off and on since that whole extended time period project. Yeah. And every time I jump in, it's like it comes back. And I think the bigger thing than realizing that I've actually built up some skills that I'm going to retain for the long term, the bigger thing is that going through that process, I realized that I could figure out how to do these things. Mm-hmm. So it just feels less daunting for me to realize I don't know how to do something in Fusion. So before I started that project of doing it for 31 days, I pretty much just knew how to extrude things. And everything else, all the other tools, if I wanted to use them, I'd have to immediately go to Google and look up how to use it, stumble mm-hmm. through it, kind of hack it together in my project. And when I was doing that in the middle of a project that I just wanted to get done, I didn't have the energy or the focus to sit down and learn that technique. And it was so miserable. Like, I just did not enjoy that. But going through the 31 days where I was just giving myself time just to learn, it gave me this experience in Fusion where I was actually enjoying it, because I'd removed the pressure of trying to make it work for a specific thing I wanted to get out of it. And having some positive experiences and having some enjoyable time in the app was so important for me, because now if I find something that I don't know how to do, it's not a big deal. Like, it doesn't stress me out. I'm like, oh, I can go and learn how to do this. And I have this feeling that I can accomplish that because I did it for 31 days in a row, mm-hmm. you know?
Like, yeah. It's amazing how much of it is confidence about learning. And, you know, and I think, like you said, a lot of people were also responding positively, thinking, you know, like hearing that other people are having problems. I know personally, I look at, you know, makers like you, and I think I could never do what she's doing. Like, we'll get into some of the projects you've done are amazing. But but like looking at people from afar, that kind of like the, what do they talk about? Like, you know, comparing yourself to someone's like Facebook page or something like that, you know, you only see the result. You don't see the struggle. Right. And like when you do see the struggle, then it's like, oh, okay. They're, you know, it you know, humanizes that person. And it also kind of, I don't know, whenever I see it, it also it makes me inspired to go and learn something else, like you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's so important to see that everyone goes through those experiences. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important to see like how people get past the hurdles. Like sometimes, like yesterday, I was just working in Fusion yesterday, and I was working for a few hours, and then I had a crash, my computer crashed, and I lost like 4 hours of work. Oof, and I was like, yeah. Oh, I was like, I need to story this because people need to know, like,
yeah,
that this happens to people and how do you get through it? So I was like working through my emotions, like in my Instagram story, I was like, I'm so frustrated right now, but I have to document this because I know this has happened to someone else. And I literally had a bowl of cereal and I was like, I feel so much better after this cereal. I need to take a picture of this cereal.
I mean,
cereal,
there's not many things that cereal can't fix though. Like
right.
I had a bowl before we started recording. I'm feeling good. You know, like
it's so powerful. But like, I was like, this happens. And and also for myself, like recording my experience of going through this crappy experience and getting past it and getting back on the horse and getting back into the file and starting over is so important just for me, because I've had those things happen and they can just kill your momentum, mm-hmm. kill your project. You just like, well, I'm not going to get that back, you know, and right. I can't sit through doing that again for 3.5 hours. But every time you do get back on the horse, it strengthens you for the next time, because there's going to be a next time. There's always going to be these things that pop up, and it helps to see other people get over those hurdles, and it helps to remember all the times that you were able to get over those hurdles. Mm-hmm. You have to log those things even just for yourself.
Yeah, that's great. So you'd mentioned the design process, and you'd mentioned, you know, your electronics work as well. First off, could you explain what, I have to admit, I'm a little design challenged myself. I look at like your work and like the nice looking things that you build. I'm like, oh boy, like what if it was just like a square PCB that was green? It's always green, you know, like, so like, could you explain first off what the design process is, and then kind of how this has led into the electronic side of things as well?
Yeah. And I've done a lot of thinking about design, in the sort of maker electronics world, tinkering world that I am in. And it's not something that people talk about a lot, but I think everybody does it. I think everyone is a designer. It's just that some of us recognize that we're designers and we enjoy design, and then we study it and we practice it, and then we can actively add it to our processes. But everyone makes design choices in their work. So for me, what I do is I try to keep it top of mind. I try to actively recognize the choices that I'm making from the very beginning. And the first step of all of my projects is research. So if I have an idea or if I'm inspired by something, I don't just jump into drawing it up and building it. I do some research about it, and I try to dig deeper into my inspiration so that it's not just one thing that's inspiring me or one thing that I'm building off of. I try to add multiple things. And that kind of helps me create like my unique take on whatever I'm going to make. And then I go into sort of a, I call it sketching, but I'm not like one of those people that has a beautiful sketchbook, but I go through a sketching phase where I'm just kind of generating ideas. And so I try not to be too precious about the ideas at the beginning. I try to generate a ton of ideas, some good ones, some bad ones. I'm just not judging anything at that moment yet. And I just try to generate a lot for me to dig through. And then from there, I prototype and I go back. Like all of this stuff that I'm generating through my process becomes material that I can go back to if I ever get stuck. Mm. So later on when I'm prototyping, if I'm like, why isn't this working? Or why did I put this button here again? Or what was the purpose of this thing? I can go back into my research and I can look at the things that inspired me and I could say, oh, okay, well, if I need a little guidance about this, like maybe I can take it from looking back at this research. And visually, I think I've just been, I've done so many projects that are really aesthetic in nature that the visual I find is really married to the function of my work. So I always think about that even from the beginning, because I think that that's how my work communicates. Like that's how your project communicates its own identity to people. It's like, what t-shirt are you going to put on today? Like you, even if you don't think you think about it, you think about it. Mm. And so I think the, it, like not putting at least some action into the visual aspect of your project is, or I should say intention, not putting intention into it. It's kind of a missed opportunity to, for your project to speak for itself. Mm. And that doesn't mean it has to be like super slick or have like an amazing enclosure, or, you know, you don't have to turn it into a whole nother project just to make your project like visually beautiful. I think it's more about making that intentional choice, like maybe having my circuit board be green says like this was made in this way, or this can be used in this way, or, you know, it puts it into a category immediately that people will know how to use it or what its purpose is. Or mm-hmm. maybe choosing a purple board or choosing to make a milled circuit board, beyond just the physical function of it, it can tell you like, well, this is something that is custom, or this is something that was made in a small run and maybe I could buy it. You know, like these are things that are communicated from the visual aspect of your project without, and if you don't make an action, and if you don't take an action around that communication, you know, it just could be a missed opportunity.
Yeah,
so I don't like to miss opportunities, so I think about it a lot.
Yeah, no, I really like that idea too, because someone might choose, so like the milled example is a really good one, I think, because someone might choose that simply because they're pressed for time, right? But other people mm-hmm. might choose it because they like that look. They want it to look handcrafted, or they want it to show that this is a, you know, something that could change or have some flexibility to it at some point in the future. Mm-hmm. And you've done board milling as well, right?
Yeah, actually, your tutorials really helped me because I had to learn how to design circuit boards. I'd never done that before. Uh-huh. Spent a lot of time on YouTube learning about KiCad.
Either one's good for me.
That program. Uh-huh. And milling circuit boards. Whoa, it's like a whole nother world. But I think, again, like I love the visual. Like I'm looking at those boards and they're just so gorgeous, you know, like mm-hmm. I've done a lot of work that is very materials based. And so I collect materials, I collect swatches. I like to really? Hold things. Like when I'm deciding what material I'm going to build out of, I hold it and I check it out and I, you know,
could you explain that some more? Like, so when you collect it, like, so does it like, do you have like a repository, like a library, or what does that end up looking like?
Yeah. So, I think of them as like swatch books. So when I was a graphic designer, I worked in print. I did a lot of print design. So we had swatch books of different papers, different plastics you can print on, different inks. So people might be familiar with Pantone swatches. They're color swatches. It's a system. It's a standardized system of color. So you can look at, like, I could pull out my Pantone swatch book and pick a color and call someone on the phone and say, I want this ink. And they can pull out their swatch book and it's the same. I'll get the same exact color.
Oh,
and
right.
It's the same thing as going to Lowe's and looking at, you know, paint chips.
Paint chips, yeah.
And I just having this
probably better names though. It's not like Icy Winter or, you know, like 5,000 names for white, you know.
right. I mean, when it's Pantone, it's like 5683 or something.
Yeah, exactly.
The other spectrum, it's completely not useful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of like developed this love for these collections of materials, and I miss that. I miss that about graphic design, because you used to get like paper vendors would send you these absolutely beautiful swatch books, and they would be these objects of design that were just, the purpose of them is just to display the paper and just show you what you could do with the paper. But they might make it about some interesting subject, some visually beautiful subject,
oh, really?
Like Japanese kimono or something. And every page is printed on a different kind of paper. And it's just like,
wow,
glorious celebration of the material.
Yeah, I can't imagine someone sending me a book of resistors and having, you know, like all the different values and being like, oh, well, this resistor value is about this story, you know?
Gosh, I love that idea. I mean, what if it was like LEDs, you know, like your LED sampler, and it was like every LED, you know, displayed in some beautiful way. And just the purpose of the object is just to, you know, sing the praises of these different options, you know? Mm. So I love that. And I sort of have this habit of collecting these materials or collecting swatch books. So like right now I'm going through all of my filament and my 3D printer filament, mm-hmm. and I designed a little filament swatch. Mm-hmm. And so I'm kind of just slowly, every time I change my filament color, I just print out one of these swatches, and I'm ending up with these rings of colors.
Yeah. I see it on your Instagram. Fun. It's great. It looks like a keychain of these different colors and everything.
Yeah. And the more I'm collecting on it, the more fun it is. Like now I have a bunch of them now, and I can take them off the ring and I can put like three of them together. I'm like, ooh, this would be a nice, you know, like ice cream color palette, or this is like sunset, or, you know, and it's just like this, my idea is to use them as a design tool. So when I'm sitting down, like designing something and trying to figure out what material I want to use, what it would look best in, I can pull these swatches out and kind of try things. And I wanted them to be small so I could take them with me shopping. If I need to get other materials, I do a lot of like mixing materials together. So I might have to go to the fabric store, and maybe I need fabric to match my filament, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's great. And you don't just go with the neon green that happens to be on the printer like I do sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes I do. Sometimes I do.
Yeah, sometimes it's a functional internal print, right?
Exactly. And that's totally fine too. That's a design choice. Like I make those kinds of design choices all the time. Like the purpose of this object is to serve this specific function, and I'm intentionally choosing to go with the color that's already there. That's totally legit design too.
Yeah, yeah. That's great. That's great. So, so getting back to electronics a little bit, mm-hmm. what have been some of the challenges you've encountered? So, you know, I really like that, you know, so this is early in the Contextual Electronics podcast, and I'm interested in talking to people like yourself who have such a wide, you know, breadth of skills. And so like you're adding electronics as a skill over time. And what has been your impression of coming into the industry and learning different things? Because we'll talk some more about projects here in a second, but like you have to great effect, you've done these really great tutorials and you integrate electronics in a lot of things. So what has been your kind of like your high level view on electronics coming into it?
Well, for me, coming into it and learning it at a later stage in my like creative development, you could say, mm-hmm. I am just so thankful that there's this culture built around sharing the information and like tutorial writing. It's kind of amazing. Like I don't see it in a lot of other creative fields, but there's this like, just people have a habit of sharing the thing that they learned in the form of a tutorial. And so I literally like learned everything I know through other people's tutorials first. And then I started reading and doing a little more studying, but tutorials are so important because they're written by people, especially for me. Like I would say tutorials are so important for people who are coming into it from a point of having other education, you know, not necessarily having studied engineering or anything like that in school, because tutorials are often written in language that I can understand. And because the person has gone through the process of building it themselves, they can call out the gotchas that are going to happen along the way. And so I initially didn't even know that I could do electronics until I saw someone on Project Runway putting electronics into her clothes. It was like the second season of Project Runway. Yeah, and it was Diana Ng. And I'll never forget it. I saw her putting like a heart rate sensor in a hoodie, and there's a camera in the hood, and it would like take a picture of something if your heart rate went up. And I was like, God, this, I've never seen these components. I've never seen this combination of electronics and clothing. Like how could that even be possible? Where can I get that stuff? You know?
Yeah.
So just seeing her doing that work and I mean, like being exposed to it in that way was so powerful for me. I know that I would not have pursued it if I hadn't seen that. So that was my entry into it. I bought her book. I bought other people's books. I just started like making stuff. And, you know, I was hooked. And I think like I was hooked because I discovered that I could do something that I never thought I could do, you know? And
yeah,
and
it like opens up new applications, it seems like, too. I mean, like that is... I guess prior to, well, I've been doing electronics long enough that I think that I was going to say like, oh, I would have attached a phone to a hoodie, but like the phones back then wouldn't have done it. But like these days, if I was thinking about coming into the industry, you know, like so much is phone centric. And yet when you break out a lot of the components and you can add them as features to a piece of garment or anything like that. Yeah. It's there really are a lot of interesting applications.
Yeah. And I think there's a really cool feedback loop in the electronics maker community with the companies that are producing these components that make these things possible. Like Adafruit is so connected to the people who use their products that they see what people are doing. And then they're like, oh, we could make something that empowers them to go a little further. And then people are like taking that new thing and they're pushing it by adding it to something else. And it's like, just like such an amazing experience to be sort of swirling in that.
Yeah. Plus you mentioned tutorials. I mean, there are some of the best tutorials on the internet, I think. I mean, Adafruit has been, they're great.
Oh my gosh. I could lose myself for hours on their tutorial site. I mean, I've learned so much from them. And again, like they have so many different people contributing great tutorials that they come from a lot of different voices. And that is so important. There might be a few different tutorials on there that are similar in terms of what the project is or what the circuit is like, but I might need to hear it from someone else because maybe they're speaking my language, you know? Mm-hmm. Like you can't have too many tutorials. I don't think you can, you know?
Right. Yeah. I think, and those light bulb moments too of like I remember having someone explain electronics concept to me, like you mentioned, in a different voice, but like just like a slight difference in how they said it. It just lit something off. And like sometimes you need that because it's, you know, the traditional ways. So a lot of what contextual electronics tries to do too is like the traditional ways are like super math focused and it's like, you know, just plow ahead with math. And I never personally resonated with that. And but having someone show you it or like through a tutorial or show it, you know, seeing it in some other manner, especially a practical manner, that opens up lots and lots of different doors.
Totally. And I used to think that, for a long part of my life, I thought I was bad at math. Mm. And it turns out, like, I'm not bad at math.
Yeah.
I just needed a reason to get good at math. You know, it's like Fusion 360. Yeah. Like, it's not that I am bad at Fusion 360. I just will be better at it after I put the time in to learn it, you know?
Right.
And I'm not going to put that time in unless I'm really motivated to make something. That's just how I am.
Yeah. Same. I think having an end project as well. I remember, so I have a friend who did very poorly in school, in math class specifically, ended up not finishing school because of it, but like one of the most brilliant electronics people I know. Like he would just, you know, whip something together and it was, I really did not like that was because there's such a focus on the math stuff and it limits a lot of minds that would otherwise have really contributed. And he still does actually, but he, you know, like, because of that, it ended up bending his career path because of it. And it's unfortunate. Wow. So I'm glad that, you know, you've got all these things that have inspired you to build more things. And I think you're inspiring others. So that helps too.
Oh, I mean, that's just like a totally mind-blowing thought to me. But I mean, it's just great that we have this way to connect and to share and to learn from other people, because I wouldn't have gotten this in school, you know, like I did have my school time and I focused on something that I didn't know was going to lead me to what I'm doing now. And like, you don't, I thought I had to know what I wanted to be when I grew up, like way early on. I mean, it turns out like you can keep changing that. You don't have to ever commit to like one thing. So, you know, thank goodness that we have this way of sharing all this information.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let's talk about some of your projects, because some of them are lurking just off camera. And so this is going to be an audio and video. So we're going to have to like, I'm going to try and paint word pictures if there is a visual element. But some of your wearable stuff, like, so first off, people can check out SophieWong.com. But some of your wearable stuff is just like super cool. So what are some of the things you're working on or have worked on that are like the wearables that are kind of in the background there?
So right behind my head is this 3D printed dress project. And that is, it's 3D printed on fabric. So I actually wanted to get electronics into that in the beginning of this project when I was in my like design phase. I was like, well, I want to get, I want to 3D print on fabric, which is this really cool technique of printing on mesh fabric. And you print sort of a cellular structure on it. I say cellular, I just mean like shapes that aren't connected to each other. And then it allows you to flex the fabric. So you get this like flexible panel of 3D printed material. I wanted to build a whole dress out of that. And I wanted to get electronics into it. I wanted to make the plastic light up. Like I had all these really big vision ideas. And then I realized early on that I didn't know enough about Fusion to model this dress. And that's when I did the 31 days project.
Oh, great. Yeah.
And then after that, I realized that just doing this amount of 3D printing and modeling was going to be a massive project for me. So I decided to pause on the electronics portion of this. And that'll maybe be in V2. But right now, it's all this one color filament. It's Wizard's Voodoo. It's called Wizard's Voodoo by Filamentum. It's this beautiful iridescent PLA. And I'm just working through Infusion, just building these panels. They're individual, they're small panels that are about, I can only print up to like 10 inches square on my bed, because I have to leave a little room around the outside of it. So each piece gets printed out and then I assemble the pieces together afterwards. And I'm working through it. It's almost done.
That's great.
But it's still got a ways to go. So that's
there's a lot of individual pieces too. So it seems like there would be a lot of like iteration and just over time.
Actually,
even in the process, I remember you explained the process when we were at a conference together. You said you like, after you start printing, then you put down this fabric and that kind of helps, then the next layers help to kind of mold it in there, right?
Exactly. So I print one layer and then I pause the printer and then I lay the fabric on top of that first layer and then I continue the print. So the fabric gets sandwiched between the first two layers of the print. And this is a technique that other people pioneered before me, and I saw what they were doing and I was like, I have to try that. So if people are interested, they should definitely check out David Shorey, who does amazing, amazing printing on fabric. And so I was definitely inspired by his work. And then I also, like I said, I like to add in other inspiration too. So I was trying to kind of take visual inspiration from some of the costumes in the semi-new Star Trek Discovery, which is, they have their version of Klingons. They're wearing this insane, like, looks like bio armor. So I kind of looked at their armor for inspiration, because it looks sort of like plated. It's like you can't really tell if it's growing out of their bodies or if it's a jacket, you know. So I kind of like that idea. So I'm kind of marrying those two ideas together in this project.
That's super cool. What about, so I remember you have a jacket as well that does light up, and you've done other things with electronics. What are some of the ones where you've merged the electronics and 3D printing and fabrics and wearables and stuff?
Yeah, so actually that jacket I did before this, and it was kind of a good testing ground for this technique. And so that is I actually wrote a tutorial about that one too. So if anyone wants to build their own, they can. That was a jacket that I purchased. It was a like a vegan leather jacket, and I used this Circuit Playground Express from Adafruit. It's that it's sort of like an educational microcontroller that has a lot of embedded sensors and LEDs and stuff already on it. So I
It
have
also
that
has
in my
the edge
pocket.
elements, right? So you can tie. Did you tie to the edge elements on that as well?
Yeah, so that one has you mean the pins going around the outside that you
That's right.
can
Yep.
sew
Yep.
to?
Sorry.
Yeah. So I soldered that project, but you could do it you could do something similar with conductive thread if you just want to sew to those pins on the outside. But I connected sort of an external strand of RGB LEDs of their NeoPixels to that circuit board. And then I ran the electronics for that through the like in between the lining of the jacket and the outside of the jacket just to have a nice clean integration. And then on the back of the jacket where the lights are shining out, I covered it with these 3D printed fabric panels. So each I think they're like little hexagons, and each hexagon lights up with an LED. So it sounds like a complicated project, but I was able to explain it in 6 pages somehow. Like it's doable.
That's great.
Yeah,
And it
and
has like
I
such a like a great like I think because you're I always like talk to people about like when you're doing like wearables with LEDs. I remember the first time I tried like the one of the entry projects, the Tony Stark
Oh,
style
yeah.
heart blink thing. And that's when I learned about like just the proximity of LEDs and the need for diffusion and stuff like that. And I feel like
Yeah.
that jacket has a really great diffuse aspect. And for each LED being able to kind of like get that nice warm glow that really helps it look more natural and human and instead of just like bright point of light,
Right. And these are the things that you discover when you actually build the project, that you don't actually have to do a very complex project to get to the point where you're learning these concepts. So for people who are new to wearable electronics, I tell them like you they often they ask me like, oh, how can I get started with what wearable electronics? And I'm like, you can start by literally just putting an LED in a jacket, in your t-shirt, in something that you're wearing. And even if it's a very simple circuit and it's pretty simple components that you're working with, you will encounter the complexity early on of trying to make that thing wearable. And it's like, where are you going to put the battery? Where are you going to put the on-off switch? How are you going to make it so you can put this thing on and it stays on, but it comes off when you want to take it off? How are you going to make it cleanable? Because anything that you wear is going to get dirty and you're going to have to clean it. How are you going to protect it from the elements? I mean, whether you're just taking a strand of fairy lights that you don't have to do any soldering to and, throwing that into a project, or whether you're building it completely from scratch and designing your own circuit board and all of that, you still have to answer these questions if you're going to make it wearable. And I think early on, I ignored those things until the end of my project, And then I'm like, wow, this thing I made is really uncomfortable. It's not properly insulated, and it's getting hot, and I've strapped it to my body. So how do I take it off?
Right, and I'm at an event and I'm stuck here all day and
Right. And oh, and then I walk into a dark room and I'm blinding everybody and I'm like, oh, fumbling for my on-off switch. Like these are the things that I've gone through, so you don't have to.
Yeah, no, and I think that's a great point too of like, you're kind of it sounds like you're saying it's going to be hard no matter what when you're getting started. And I think that I always talk to people about that with following tutorials as well, kind of like to bring it back to tutorials. Like I was always kind of standoffish about tutorials at the beginning and kits and stuff like that. And what I wish I could say to my younger self, and now I say to other young people, and I say, everything's going to go wrong anyways. So it's good to like follow along with someone and then figure out
Right.
the stuff that goes wrong. And I feel like that's where
Right.
tutorials and kits and like that kind of thing is like such a great way to get started. And then eventually you work your way up to maybe just putting the, you know, the custom one LED on there, like you're talking about. And then maybe then the more, and then eventually you work your way up to the Sophie level jacket, you know, like,
Oh, exactly. Like I think now I realize two things about myself. Like I realize that I have a certain amount of work, like the amount of work I'm willing to put into a project it's a number, it's an exact number. And I can't do more and I can't do less. So it's like, what do I want to spend that work on? Is it going to be, you know, for this project, do I want to do a lot of electronics work? Well, then maybe I'll give myself a break on some of the construction work, and I'll start with something that's already built, that's purchased, and I'll add electronics to it. I just know that I have a certain amount of stamina. And if I try to do too much in one project, I will run out of steam. And that is, it's so hard to push through those moments of like losing your momentum. So I kind of like, I've built enough things now that I know how I work, so I can work around my, my eventual lack of stamina and burnout. But right. The other thing is, I know that I like to bite off more than I can chew. So if the project is too, not easy, but if it seems like I'll be able to do it too quickly, it doesn't excite me as much as something that's going to be really challenging. So it's a kind of a sweet spot for me personally. I know that I like to be challenged, but I also need to manage my expectation for how much I can get done before I run out of steam.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, and that's good. I mean, I remember hearing a podcast about that, where there's like some, it has to be like 4 to 10% harder. You know, it is like that sweet spot. Like there's been research on that kind of thing too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So let's look at some of the other projects you have here. So you have a light painting glove. That's another electronics based one. What was the story with that one?
Yeah. So that is another, project that I did for Hackspace. So it's another tutorial. And, I realized that when I'm designing projects for, specifically to be written as tutorials, that I enjoy that design challenge of, how can I create a project that is exciting and will satisfy that kind of sweet spot for me and for other people? Like it's an exciting enough end product that I want to do it, but it's teachable in 6 pages with a limited amount of photographs, and it incorporates all the concepts that I want to convey, like adding electronics to a wearable and doing a small amount of coding. And so that project, I actually started with those constraints. And I was like, what can I do that will fill these constraints? And what kind of object can I create that will be like a creative tool? Like I wanted to do a wearable that was about more than just wearing an LED. Like what can you do once you have this LED on your body? So I came up with this idea of light painting. So light painting is when you have like, if you're doing photography and you leave the shutter open for like a long exposure photograph and you move the LED across the frame, you get these beautiful streaks of light and you can write with it. And some people do some really cool light painting art. So I thought, oh, if you strap an LED to your hand, that would be really useful if you wanted to do some light painting. So the fun part that I wasn't expecting was I had so much fun just doing the light painting after the fact. So it's just an LED. It's an RGB LED, a NeoPixel from Adafruit. And I used a piece of conductive, actually I think it's a metal snap. I just created like a capacitive area on the glove so that when I move when I connect two fingers, it turns the light on. So it gives you this control to turn the light on and off as you're doing the light painting. And it was so fun that I spent way more time actually just making the light painting photographs afterwards. Right. And that's
the tool, wasn't the fun part. It was the result of that tool.
Yeah, Yeah, and that's one of the things that I love about writing the tutorials is, as a designer, I get to do all these different things that I like to do. I get to design the project, I get to build it, I get to do the photography. I love doing photography, and then I get to write, and I enjoy the writing process too. So
that's great. And would you have any tips for people? Like, documentation is such an important part of projects, and I think that it helps share your work with the world, of course, but then also, I don't know, I've personally found that, like, when I document something, I go back to it later, I'm like, who wrote this? Oh, I wrote this. Okay. And, you know, right. Usually it's in a bad way, but do you have any tips on how to better capture information for either your future self or other people?
Oh yeah. I leave my equipment out all the time. So I always have lights. So first of all, I always have lights around my table, and I have photography lights, and sometimes I just turn them on so I can see better when I'm working, but it helps so much to have good lighting in the middle of your process so that you can just pull your phone out or grab a camera and just take pictures as you go. So having the equipment available to you, and if it's just your phone, awesome. Like, just keep a running documentation going on your phone. Sometimes I make albums in my camera roll on my phone. Like, I just keep adding to the album for my project. And sometimes I get a little more complex. I use Evernote a lot. Evernote is great because you can throw photos, you can throw text, and it's all searchable. I throw my code in there. So like, I love Evernote. I think the best way to keep yourself organized when you're documenting, especially for longer projects, is to just make sure you're putting everything in the same place. Because I often get spread out. I have multiple notebooks going at the same time. And then when I go back and I try to look for my project documentation, it's incomplete because I put it some here, it's some there. And that has tripped me up in the past. So now I try to keep everything. That's why I love Evernote, because I just throw everything in there. And I do a lot of documentation just with pencil and paper too. So I try to limit myself to one sketchbook at a time.
That's good. Yeah.
And, you know, I find that I used to try to have one book for each project, but it was too much to manage. So I just put everything in one book, one sketchbook. And that's a little bit of a lie, because I actually have two. But my sketchbook is for sketching. And then I have a notebook that is, it's like this arc system. So it's this particular type of paper where it has a specific punch design on the side. Uh-huh.
Does it capture it in Evernote? Is that the one? I know there's one that, like, you can write on it and it takes it into Evernote. But those are really expensive.
Yeah. I've seen that. Yeah, no, this is just like from Staples. It's like the instead of three holes on the side, it's like this.
Like a spiral add-on kind of thing?
Yeah, and so you can put it in, so it folds back like a spiral-bound notebook, because I require spiral-bound notebooks. I can't deal with the ones you can't fold back. This one lets you fold it back, but it also lets you put paper in and out of it, like stick it in and pull it right out. Uh-huh. So, and you can punch anything.
So you, like, shuffle your stuff around then.
Exactly. I just need, like, for me, I lean heavily on office supplies. I staple things into my book. I tape them in. I have to capture everything. And sometimes it's, like, fabric scraps or, you know, like I said, I'm obsessed with materials. So sometimes it's, like, a snip of cardboard or a particular material that I used. I try to keep track of that stuff. Any way I can attach it to my notebook, I do.
Yeah, that's great. And it seems tough when it is that kind of like the physical realm, having, you know, like the materials that you talk about, sketches. I know a lot of people like to sketch, and that's way different than if you're going onto a computer and sketching. And then, you know, have it searchable. So it's that kind of like duality of digital and physical. So.
Yeah, and I go back and forth a lot between digital and physical, and I'm constantly trying new tools for that. And I think there's some great tools out there, but for me, the tools I already know how to use are the ones I prefer, because I want to spend my time on my projects rather than, you know, learning a new version of Evernote that might give me like a couple of more, you know, a little That's bit right. more functionality. Right. It's not really worth it for me until it's like a ton more functionality.
Yeah. So what are some, to wrap up here, what are some projects that don't, that you wish people knew about that don't get as much kind of exposure? Maybe older projects that don't come up anymore, or like smaller things that might not be kind of like banner level things that are, you know, like some of your projects, you have these ongoing things, like your space helmet is a really great one that, you know, people see over time, but that's like a big one that you've done. What are there any like smaller ones or ones that maybe don't come up as much anymore that you would want people to look at?
Yeah. For a while, I was really into making these LED manicures, and they're so weird. Like, and I think, like, so basically, I take LEDs, and the first version of it was just single color LEDs, and I added them to little nails, and then just connected wires to them. And it was directly inspired by this Japanese pop group music video that I love. And it's this group that does a lot of they add technology to their performances in a really cool way all the time. And so I loved this visual.
What are they called?
They're called Perfume. The group is called Perfume. And they often work with a designer named Daito Manabe. He's amazing. And I followed his work for a long time. I'm really inspired by him.
That's great.
And this video has the singers, they have these LEDs like strapped to their fingernails. And it's just like this moment that just hit me. I was like, wow, that I've never seen anything like that. And it just, you know, it was really inspired by just the visual. So I wanted to recreate it. So I did. My first version is pretty much just a recreation of what they showed in the video. And then I went a little further and I redid the project with RGB LEDs with NeoPixels, and that is actually a tutorial on Adafruit as well, so people could go and build that. I've never seen anybody build it. I would love to see someone make that. It's a totally impractical object. I mean, the thing is like, and often people comment on it and they're like, oh, well, maybe you could try this method for hiding the wires. And I was like, oh, I don't want to hide the wire. I like
right,
the
you
wires.
You want to have that as part of
the
experience.
I like that
experience.
Kind of cyberpunk aesthetic.
Yeah,
so, but I've never seen anyone make it and use it, you know, in a photo shoot or anything like that. And I would love to see someone take that and go further with it.
That's great. Yeah, especially with the NeoPixels are just so flexible in terms of like being able to dim them and fade all the colors and everything. I've just seen so many great things.
Yeah.
You know, like Badge Life community too, like they love their NeoPixels. And like I love when people are taking electronics and merging with art. I think that's first off, I think it's a great way that people come into the realm of electronics. And also I love that it feels like the future. You know, like you mentioned the cyberpunk kind of aesthetic,
right.
But like I don't know, it's like, oh yeah, we're kind of there, you know, like we've got the dystopia part sometimes and like let's get the cool parts going, you know? Like,
yeah, I'm definitely inspired by that. I like to see these things that I've seen like in animes and in movies, like, you know, it's somehow like materializing. I think like the first time we had our first 3D printer going, it was like, oh my gosh, years ago. And we started it up and we turned it on and it started printing. And I remember hearing the sound of it working, you know, and it was like moving around.
Yeah,
and it's like, and I was like, oh, that is what robots sound like. Like, this is the future. This, oh my gosh, this is actually
I own a
happening,
Wall-E.
You know?
A Wall-E.
It's a Wall-E. It sounds like Wall-E. Like, it's crazy. And, you know, I'll never get tired of that. I could just watch my 3D printers go. They're just fascinating. You know, I love to watch them work.
Yeah, that's great. Where can people find out more about your work and kind of watch your process as you're working through it?
So I post a lot on my Instagram and on my Twitter. I post about what I'm currently working on, and then I try to collect things on my website, which is sophiewang.com, and all of my handles for Instagram and everything you can find on sophiewang.com.
Great. Well, thanks so much for joining us. I really appreciate hearing about all this stuff, Sophie.
Thanks for having me. It was awesome to talk to you.
So that was our first podcast with Sophie Wong. I really enjoyed getting to hear about all of her design process and how she thinks about doing design and integrating electronics into what she does. I loved watching her 31 days of Fusion, and I recommend you go check that out. It's a great way to keep yourself accountable as a you know, someone who's learning. It's a great way to show your output, and you really, you know, the amount of things that she got through in 1 month was a wonderful experience as an outsider looking at her learning process. And I recommend that you try that out and maybe you follow along. As for the Contextual Electronics Podcast, this is the first episode. We're going to have three that we're releasing in a row right at the beginning. And if you're so inclined, if you're enjoying this, please go rate us over on iTunes. We have a new iTunes account page there. You can go download future episodes, sign up in your podcast reader, share it with others. We'd love to have that happen. And really excited to bring you more Contextual Electronics podcasts in the future. Thanks for watching and thanks for listening.